Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great honor to speak to this group today. I'll spend about 15 minutes talking about my favorite topic, that is technology. I have the privilege of leading the technology organization at the American Bureau of Shipping. Okay. Need that? And for those that are not aware, the role of that organization at the Bureau is to support the development of our rules, support research and development throughout the industry, and also I have the privilege of leading the development of our digital tools for the ABS business as much as a passion of mine as it is a privilege. So let's talk about technology and where it stands in present-day shipping. So it's been 5 full years since MARPOL Annex 6 sulfur limits went into effect and a switch from VLSFO and the requirement for exhaust gas scrubbers was mandated. Today, the order book is about 50% dual-fuel LNG. EPL and ESDs are becoming fairly common, so it's time to really ask, is the industry actually moving toward a cleaner future? EUMRV data collection was started in 2018 and IMO DCS the following year, so we do have information to review. Looking at the Thetis emissions data, the 2024 carbon intensity index globally has decreased by 21% since 2018, seemingly on a very good trajectory. Ships are indeed getting cleaner and more efficient. In that same time period, however, the total global tonnage has increased from 1.3 billion gross tons to 1.6 billion gross tons. That 300 million gross ton growth is equivalent to the entire ABS class fleet. We project by the start of 2027, the global fleet will be at 1.8 billion gross tons. So that reflects a very promising time of growth and prosperity for the industry. But what does that mean in terms of tonnage of actual annual greenhouse gas as measured as CO2 equivalent? In 2019, 1.01 gigatons of carbon was emitted from global shipping. By 2024, despite better efficiency, that figure has actually increased by 5% to 1.06 gigatons. So although we have cleaner ships entering the global fleet on an individual basis, the growth in tonnage has outstripped this improvement and the global greenhouse gas emissions is slightly up since 2018 simply because the fleet is larger. Projecting from the order book, we do see opportunity to reverse the trend by 2030, but it seems unlikely that we are going to reach the top-down calculated target of 0.64 gigatons of emissions by 2030, even with the most aggressive assumptions. Something is going to have to accelerate the transformation process, and here technology can make the contribution. To the extent that fuels our technology, clearly they are the most important part of the puzzle. That is LNG today, and ammonia, biofuels, and methanol in the medium term. Drop-in biofuels are talked about as a strategic component for many owners, and while the use of biofuels grew tremendously last year, 70% growth year-over-year increase in biofuels, they still only represent 0.2% of total fuel consumption in our industry. The right noble decision of MEPC 82 last October to signal a pivot from tank-to-wake to well-to-wake accounting approach inherently puts much more demand on green and blue fuel types, which is still less than 1% of the available ammonia produced today. Simply the availability of green and blue fuels and the infrastructure not only to bunker them, but to produce them in the first place, and any sort of capacity or quantity needed to meet 2030 goals does not appear to be on track and creates even more market uncertainty. Further down the trajectory timeline, we can consider hydrogen for short sea and, in fact, nuclear for transocean shipping, and those technologies are being discussed more and more. Of all these technologies, both mid and long term, from my seat, nuclear has been in the news the most. I just spent 3 weeks overseas in Europe and the Pacific speaking to ABS clients, and every single client that I visited wanted an ABS briefing on nuclear energy. So allow me to talk about that for about a minute. From our view, the regulatory environment that would enable reactors licensed at multiple ports of call is simply not a near-term reality, making floating nuclear propulsion plants the more plausible and likely first use of Generation 4 reactors at sea. The IAEA is taking note and has launched a program called ATLAS, which is Atomic Technology Licensed at Sea, to help create some of those measures of commonality, but this will undoubtedly be a slow process, and the IAEA is not a licensing authority. Within the U.S., the NRC Commissioner Caputo has appointed leadership for FNTP projects, the first time in the history of the Commission. ABS has released our first guide in nuclear notation in decades, and we do have a number of projects with clients that are very serious on the topic. Momentum is building, but with an estimate of the first Gen 4 FNTP to sea still a decade away and ships years after that, we must temper the excitement of this technology potential with a realistic expectation that without significant government intervention, this is still a long-term solution. So what can we do today that can help push forward the path to zero that doesn't carry the uncertainty of fuel technologies? Winners will need to be game-changing technologies, and there are a number of game changers out there at the moment, but the biggest one that can absolutely help us to decarbonize is AI. The machinery and systems onboard vessels already generate tons of performance data, much of which the industry is not using to its full advantage, but correctly analyzing this data, AI and ML systems draw the inferences and conclusions that lead us to planned maintenance, condition-based maintenance, and finally to the holy grail of predictive maintenance. Condition-based class programs are fast following, and with class as the foundation of a maintenance program, these programs will contribute greatly to reductions in unplanned downtime and improve reliability. In fact, in meeting with many owners over the last couple of weeks, I've learned that we are not only using data-driven approaches on the main engines for maintenance, but also for maximizing engine efficiency, those fuel savings. I've in fact seen that using engine performance drop, measuring it far before maintenance would be mandated by the OEM, it pays back dividends in fuel savings and compliance cost avoidance. At sea, the ability of AI-enhanced systems to analyze vast pools of weather and ocean data helps vessels plan the most efficient routes and even change in routing during a voyage. In ports, AI algorithms can analyze vast data sets to predict vessel arrival times, optimize berthing schedules, and forecast demand patterns, enabling smart ports to allocate resources in advance to enjoy the resulting improved operational efficiencies, as we heard from the prior panel. There are also pure safety advances in here as well. Recently, the India flag mandated the use of closed-circuit television with AI-supported technology to observe the crew and identify risky behavior and corrective actions. Coupling these use cases together, AI is helping the fleet meet the carbon emissions challenge, and safely, and is actually a bottom-line driver, which is usually the best incentive for technology adoption. But all this exciting technology carries its own set of challenges. One to always bear in mind as an emerging risk for our fleets is cybersecurity. As long as cyber criminals can do things like shut down a major port, as happened at Nagoya, Japan, for three days in 2023 with a Lockbit ransomware attack, it's hard to imagine owners and insurers happily putting billions of dollars of property under the total control of a computer. It's a brutal fact of life that many companies have learned the hard way that increased reliance on digital comes with an increased risk and vulnerabilities. For one, complex assets and large organizations run thousands of pieces of software from many vendors. Besides the potential for compatibility issues between at least some of them, any of them might have out-of-date security protection and thus be open to attack. Cyber problems have been with us since the first digitally connected systems. A couple of years ago, during post-COVID congressional hearings on U.S. port security, Executive Director Gene Soroka of the Los Angeles Port cited the establishment of a Port Cyber Resilience Center as instrumental to helping them stop some 40 million cyber attack attempts per month. And it's important to keep in mind, even if our organization is insulated from attack, your suppliers may not be, and thus they may pass you malware in a transaction that you assume to be secure. Hence, the recent establishment of IAC's Unified Requirements 26, Cyber Resilience of Ships, and 27, Cyber Resilience of Onboard Systems, are both now fully in force, and an important cyber protection precaution is to find your weak links. Possibly the biggest lesson learned for our industry's accumulated cyber incidents is this. You're never immune to cyber attacks, and you're never more vulnerable than when you think you're safe. And that's because cyber attacks can be targeted, but sometimes people put malicious software out there just for fun. And even if you're not on anyone's list, someone in your company may bring a demon into the house just through carelessness. So now that we've covered the Wild West parts of the digital horizon, let me assure you of some of its considerable upside. Getting the most out of your digital life starts with good data management. As I mentioned earlier, our vessels, systems, generate a tremendous amount of data, and if used intelligently, this information is the key to operational excellence. It's also the key to meeting the operational demands of the carbon culture and the challenge of reducing carbon emissions while maintaining efficiency and profitability. Satisfying CII and fuel EU regulations, for example, takes a great deal of calculation. Adjusting the dynamic carbon footprint of a vessel in service requires technologies like real-time data streaming and continuous monitoring of vessel operations. Maritime operations are inherently dynamic, with fluctuating conditions such as cargo load, vessel speed, and weather frequently having a substantial impact on energy consumption and therefore emissions. Traditional optimization techniques with their predefined models and static parameters have a hard time dealing with dynamic situations and real-time changes. These require innovative, adaptable solutions if you are to remain competitive while meeting your stringent carbon requirements. AI and ML systems, drawing from well-managed real-time data streams, can help improve that adaptability. Now, in closing, it's called artificial intelligence for a reason. An AI-controlled crane won't drop a container on your head because it's nice. It does so because the data tells it not to do that. These systems can calculate, but they can't discern. They can help make smarter decisions, but they don't make us smarter. They are great tools to help our seafarers become more effective and safe, but it would be a mistake to see them as a means to eliminate jobs. In fact, when AI removes people from a risky, repetitive, labor-intensive activity, it frequently requires them to be replaced with support staff at another location. AI-assisted operations are requiring new skill sets in traditional maritime careers and also causing new maritime career paths to emerge. The seafarer of tomorrow, and not a distant tomorrow, will have to be comfortable with digital technologies and will have to understand how to use them to their advantage. That's one of the main thrusts in the curriculum of ABS's new training centers around the world, adding the needed level of digital literacy to traditional seafarer training. We are facing a situation today that is not unlike the introduction of computers and automated systems into maritime operations from decades ago, to include even electronic charts some 30 years ago. But once the benefits become clear, these systems have become commonplace. AI and digitally enhanced automations are steps along that same continuum. But unlike the past, these systems are extremely powerful and can tear down an operation just as easily as they can build it up. That means today, at the beginning of the development of AI, ML, and other next-generation digital aids, we really need to collaborate and invest in developing the rules, regulations, and best practices and cyber protection practices that will lead to the responsible creation, adoption, and use. Companies that harness AI effectively today will be the industry leaders of tomorrow, but only if they do so remembering that artificial intelligence is the vehicle, but human intelligence is the driver. Thank you.